There is something so empowering about starting a business during a global pandemic. Like, we are going to look back on this time and be like, holy shit, I am so amazed that I figured out how to launch a business during probably the most tumultuous, dramatic, scary time of our lives. Like, how do we pull that off? And I think taking a moment to really recognize that and think about the stories that you're going to tell in the future of when you started a business or launched a business during the pandemic is really cool and really exciting, even though right now it might seem really hard. Obviously, the pandemic is not over for majority of us that live in the world. I mean, I think every single country has their own pandemic challenges right now. But I think what's so inspiring about today's guest is she started her business because of something she saw through COVID. And that is just so freaking cool to me. Like, she saw an opportunity with her co-founder to build something that would help people through the pandemic. And today we have on Cecilia, who is the co-founder of Slides with Friends. And what is so cool about this is there's so many nuances when it comes to having Zoom calls now that we don't even think about. One thing that Cecilia mentions, she brings up some hacks of like things to keep in mind or things that maybe most people don't know about. We've had to completely change our entire demeanor and how we go to work through Zoom calls. And she brings up the fact that we can't just pick up on social cues super easily now than, you know, we used to when we were in person, whether that's going to class, you know, going to a lecture, or actually just going into work and having a meeting with the people that you work with. We can no longer pick up on these cues, and we can no longer get to know people on a certain level anymore because we are all virtual. And this has really changed the way that we are going to be working forever. And what Cecilia and her husband have built is incredible because they've built this entire company called Slides with Friends. They pivoted during the pandemic because they saw a need, and they created this company to help people feel more engaged during calls, help people give better presentations, help people find more fun and joy in the daily meetings that they have. Like, it is such a smart tool to build. And some of her clientele, like the people that are using this platform, I'm like, how did you do this so quickly? She has some of the biggest companies in the world already using her platform because she saw a need and she just went for it. And I think not only should we be so proud of ourselves for starting businesses during this time or maintaining businesses during this time, but the fact that someone said, I'm going to take this insight of things that are happening during COVID and turn it into a business idea is just brilliant to me. And Cecilia has built something that is just so cool. It's going to be so helpful to so many companies out there. And I'm so excited for you guys to hear from her. She is a true inspiration and she just looks at things differently. If you want to learn how she built something so quickly, how she came up with the idea, and then also how she's been marketing it or getting in front of businesses, then you will absolutely love this episode. It's a business to business brand, right? So it's not necessarily direct to consumer, but I can see anyone listening to this getting so much value from this episode because she just has a different perspective on things that I think will really complement your overall knowledge in the digital space. So she's great. Hope you love today's episode, and I will catch you guys on the flip side. Because it's trying to save space. Who the hell knows? I don't know. Okay, so let's talk about how this idea came to you during the pandemic.
Sure. So I was actually running a different company when the pandemic started. It was a pretty big company, and we were in a few cities, but it was a real-world services company. So when the pandemic started, we took something like an 80% drop in revenue.
Wow.
Which was pretty intense. So we took everything remote. Everybody went to their own like little houses to do their work. And we ended up having a really tough time with a few things. One of them was like corporate culture, team culture, cohesion. The other was onboarding. We were still doing a lot of onboarding. We ended up having to take all of that remote. So we ended up being like, we need something that can help us with this. And we're fortunate to have, my co-founder is a full stack developer, so he can just really, if you tell him to build something, he can go and build it, which is very impressive. So he was like, well, let's build something. So we ended up creating this tool called Slides with Friends. And what it does is basically make your presentation interactive. So if you are trying to quiz a group or onboard a new employee and ask them questions and have them ask you questions, this is what that's for. It is to help you kind of create connection, even if you can't be together. So that's kind of what we ended up pivoting into during the pandemic, because we realized once we built it, that a lot of other people might have the same issues that we were having and might benefit from it as well.
Amazing. I have so many questions. The first being, did you just completely stop with your other company? Like, what was that transition like for you?
So when quarantine rules started, basically people stopped really needing our services. My previous company was kind of a pet care technology. So we were kind of the organizational tech between the dog walker and the dog owner. So as you can imagine, people not going to work, people not going on trips, people don't need dog walking services very much. So it got very quiet very fast. We were actually having an all hands meeting in our home base, which is in Philadelphia. And that was the second week of March. And we had everybody coming into the main office. And in the beginning, like our plans for the week, we had all the plans set for the week. And we were like, oh, maybe we should mention this COVID thing. And we'll give it a nod and say like, oh, it's not really going to affect us in a super huge way. And that was Monday. And then by Friday, we were basically like, oh my God, I don't know if anyone's going to be able to get home.
Yes.
Like the planes are canceled. The flights are gone. Like, so it was a very quick change. And we had to adjust and adapt very quickly. So what ended up happening with that it just got very quiet. We still had, you know, 25% of our customers still using us. So we helped a lot of frontline workers, which I think I'm still proud of having done that. So it just got so quiet that we ended up having a team of people who were like, now what do I do? Like, we can't push on growth, which is what we were doing. We were scheduled to launch New York City in late spring 2020, obviously. That did not happen. So we had a lot of bandwidth and not a lot of things for them to do. So we backburnered the pet care tech, and we moved everything over to working on a couple of different things, one of them being pet care content. So we had a lot of experts who were just like, now what do I do? And I'm like, well, write me a blog about how to do a perfect dog walk. So we pivoted into content, and then we spent the rest of our resources working on slides.
Wow. And what's your background as an entrepreneur? How did you get into being an entrepreneur? Was this something that you've always dreamt of, or did it just happen by chance?
Yeah, I had not dreamt of it. I'm an English literature major from school, so, you know, obviously. And I went from working in academia after I graduated to marketing and design and like copywriting, advertising, branding. So for pretty large clients in a bunch of different agencies. And I did that for about 10 years and not quite. And I got to a point where I was kind of dissatisfied with that. I wanted to be doing more good in the world than I felt like I was doing with it being in the advertising industry. Not that there's anything wrong with people in the advertising industry. I just didn't feel like it was for me. And I was kind of struggling with it, honestly. And my boyfriend, now husband at the time, was like, do you know, you can do anything. He's also an entrepreneur. So he's like, you don't have to do this. You can literally do anything that you want. Like, go do something else. I was like, oh yeah, anything would be better than this. So
advertising is so tough too, because you get assigned to clients that you have to work on, and you're just not inspired by them sometimes, but you have to do the work. So it can feel really unfulfilling sometimes.
Yeah. And I wanted to do good in the world, and I didn't feel that I was doing that.
Yeah.
I was working, you know, it was large clients and not people doing terrible things, but just like, I couldn't get behind like, oh, you need to buy this giant wedding reception package because that will make you happy. But I don't think that it will make you happy, but I had to tell people that
right.
It would, which is, you know, that's the job and there's value in that. But I was struggling with that.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, maybe I can do something else. And so I quit my job and I was like, let's start something. So that's how the pet care tech business started. Because I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to go and walk some people's dogs. That's what I'm going to do.
That actually sounds pretty great.
And it grew from there, which is interesting. And a bumpy ride, but
yeah. And how did you meet? So for people that are listening who maybe aren't aware of what a full stack developer is, mm-hmm. can you explain what that position is and then how you met that person?
Sure. A full stack developer is the person that you want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Totally true.
So he's technical, and my co-founder, who's also my husband.
Good to know.
And so what that means is that he can basically build everything from back end to front end. So if you need like the user interface and you need the stuff that the user interface is telling the system to do in the background, that's what you need a full stack developer for. You can also get two people to do it, but it's nice to have one person.
Yeah, they're just like builders basically that can build up a vision that you have in more technical terms.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So you and your husband then decided, okay, we're going to pivot. We're going to start this new company. And you're probably looking at the landscape thinking, wow, this pandemic is happening for a lot longer than we all thought it was going to. What was it like building something and getting it to market in the midst of the pandemic? Because it really is so beneficial for people that are remote. And we probably never would have envisioned us being remote for this long. But I'm sure when the pandemic started, it was probably a race to the finish line.
Absolutely. It was funny. So in the very beginning, we started using this with our friends as well, because we were in quarantine. We couldn't go see each other and it was getting very lonely. So it was early on and I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do like a team trivia night with all of our friends. And I remember, I now look back on this and laugh, but I remember thinking, oh, well, I better put that together fast because it's Thursday now. And if we do it this weekend, it'll be okay. But by next weekend, quarantine's going to be over. Yeah, so people are exactly. just going to go out. Yeah.
Scary, like sad March. And scary to think that, but so true.
I know. I was so sure that it was just going to be a little thing. So we kind of started building it around that and around our company needs. And we were like, oh, well, we're going to use this for the first time when we do a trivia night with our friends. And it ended up being a lot of fun. I was like, well, but this is probably the last step we're going to need it. That was very wrong. So actually that trivia night turned into it was a weekly, every weekend we would get together and someone in the group would build a trivia game on the platform, which has also really helped us make it very user-friendly, because not all of our friends are very technical. And every week they would come, and at the end of every week I'd be like, all right, are we done? Do we want to do this again? And every week they'd be like, no, let's do it again. So we ended up doing that trivia night for almost 2 years.
Wow.
Like ongoing. And we just had our very last one, and we had it in person. And it was so exciting.
Aww.
Everybody in the room.
Yeah.
Like, very, very nice.
That's amazing. And so you realized there was more to building human connection through a screen in a way.
Yeah.
And what was it like starting with trivia and then realizing that this opportunity could span corporate cultures and businesses that really need to keep people engaged? Like, when did that light bulb moment happen for you?
I think there is extreme difficulty that we don't acknowledge when it comes to video calls. I think they're extremely draining. I think the cognitive load is a lot higher when we're in a video call. There's a lot of things that you have to do that you don't think about. Everything from like physically, you have to make sure that your head is in the box in the right spot. You can't move around. You can't get up. Groups on a video call, you've removed every social cue that you ever relied on. You don't realize it, but like you can't make eye contact with someone. You can't do an aside. You can't pick up on any body language that's not, you know, above the shoulders or below the shoulders. So there's a lot of work that we're doing in these calls. And I was noticing it on our team calls where I was like, I'm exhausted by these and I'm not sure why. And it's because we've removed all of that helpful stuff that we have when we're in person that we've learned over, we've evolved over millennia to have. So when you are doing a group interaction, like with more than four people on a video call, I'm just going to go ahead and say, that sucks. Like staring at a room where you're supposed to be interacting on an equal level, of just a bunch of little boxes. You're not sure when you're supposed to talk. You're not sure if you're muted or not. You're not sure, like, what are the rules anymore? The rules are gone. How do we make that better? Let's add a little bit more structure back. Let's add some clearer rules back that can take the place of that social dynamic that we are missing in these video calls. So that's kind of led the entire product as we were building it. Everything that we built, we kept in mind. The goal of this is to make interacting with other people in a group easier, more connective, and just less draining and better for me to do. So things like knowing when I'm supposed to talk, things like being able to make sure that my voice is heard even if there are a lot of people. We built all kinds of individual interactions into the software to make those things doable in a way that they are not when you're just on a Zoom call with 10, 50 people.
That's fascinating. I mean, it's so smart. How did we not have this before for any remote calls is like amazing to me. And what was it like building the like building blocks of like different features? Was it you talking to prospective customers about it? Was it pulling from your experience of what you knew could be helpful? Like, how did you start that process?
So let me just give you some like background about how it works. It's called Slides with Friends. And what it does is basically takes a slide deck presentation like you'd be familiar with maybe Google Slides or PowerPoint, and creates each individual slide that you add is an interaction type. So there's a multiple choice slide that has steps for multiple choice answers. So multiple choice slide, you add it, you put in your question, the next step is the answer options, the next step is, you know, showing off the correct answer, or you can hide that, you don't have to show off the correct answer. So there are a bunch of very standard interactions that we've built in, multiple choice slide, like open text answer slide, and then we started thinking bigger picture about, okay, what are ways that can enable group connection that aren't just like, oh, for trivia or, oh, for like brainstorm, a simple thing. So we have some really fun interactions that we built. And the most fun about this project for me is kind of sitting down together and ideating what interactions are going to be great for people. So we have a photo share slide, which is basically you just can either upload or take a photo, upload it, and then it will weight the people who haven't responded yet more, and it will show at random however many pictures you want to go through. So we use this a lot for like icebreakers. We have like a scavenger hunt where it's like, go in your house and take a photo of your favorite mug. And then like people really, really love talking about their own content and sharing their own content. And so we kind of weighted that into every interaction that we have built. One of my favorite slides is, we call it a user vote slide. And the way that it works, it's kind of like a Cards Against Humanity game. So you get a prompt, then everybody sends in an answer to that prompt, and then it shows all of the answers, but not who said what. And you vote on which answer you like the best, but you can't vote for your own.
That's so cute.
And it shows who said what and how many votes everybody got. So it's kind of like a brainstorming slide, but it's also a game slide. So each interaction is its own little game. So honestly, what we've built is kind of like a no code event builder.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what was that customer process like of starting to plant the seed? And also, before you answer that, what was the timeline between when you started to when you felt like it was ready to start go to market?
Yeah. So let's see, we started building it April 2020. Maybe May 2020. We launched with MVP November 2020. So we're actually about to have a 1 year anniversary, which is
Is crazy. That's so fast.
It's been a crazy ride. It's been a lot of fun. And we're starting to see, you know, real traction. We've got like,
you have a major list of companies that are already using this, which is super impressive. And so what was it like in November, right? It's November 2020. And clearly at that point too, there was like no sight of the pandemic really ending anytime soon. You know, the vaccine conversation was starting, but really no like hint that things were going to be definitively over soon. So then how did you start to position it to prospective clients?
We did a lot of just kind of generalized outreach and seeing what people were looking for. I think the biggest work that we did was trying to position it correctly for our key users. So like finding out who our real customers were, the people who we are bringing the most value to, and then talking directly to them. So we actually just rebuilt our website a few months ago, and it's been great because we are slowly honing in on that perfect product market fit, where we are bringing actual ongoing value to a specific subset of people, and we're learning how to talk to them. And I am about to, when I get done with this call, I'm about to go in and do a bunch of customer interviews to get even further into that. So we ended up having just a lot of organic traffic to this, because people are looking for stuff like word clouds and interactive like team building games, and we build all of those things. So I think that's how we got some of our bigger names. Like, I'm pretty sure IBM came to us, and like someone there was like,
"Can you imagine what was that like when you see a brand like that saying, hey, we want to use your product, and you're like, we're so new.
There's three of us. Like, but sure, it was a lot of fun. I talked to I'm blanking on her name now, but she was like the head of digital people or something cool like that. There are all these cool titles in tech these days, and I'm not sure what everybody does, but I'm jealous of their job.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and she was having a great time. She's one of our earlier users too, so she helped us like kind of hone our message, which was a lot of fun.
Nice. How did she hear about you?
I don't remember. Like, I remember seeing a sign up at IBM.com on our
She's
like, I want to talk to that person.
That's amazing. That's yeah. And do you think that, is it primarily HR people that are looking for this, or who's the target person that is most inclined to use this?
Yeah, it's a lot of people management. It's been really interesting seeing. So I think we have kind of three tiers categories of users. It's education. So a lot of teachers like us, and we're trying to put together an education plan now. So
cool.
I want to price out.
That's
teachers.
Awesome.
corporate. So a lot of HR, a lot of management, a lot of team leaders, a lot of like sales team leaders, and then the community. So community managers, community organizers. And it's been really interesting, especially as a woman building this sort of thing, seeing a lot of honestly other women using this tool, seeing the job titles of people shift into actually mirroring some of the actual previously unpaid work or previously undervalued, let's say, work of like team cohesion, people management, like making sure that people still like each other and want to talk to each other, making sure there's connection between people. People are noticing how important that is and how much value that brings. And I think because historically it's been something that women kind of just did, has been undervalued, and now I'm seeing people focusing on it, and like community is becoming a thing that has real value. So it's really exciting to watch that shift, and I want us to kind of be a part of that shift.
Yeah, that's amazing. When you were building this, what were some real struggles that you faced? Well, like, was there ever a moment where you were like, shit, I don't know if this is going to pan out, or like, are we going to get paid soon? Like, what was that? Like, what were you encountering that was kind of like making you maybe question things, or did you maybe never question things?
Oh no, all the time. if you're not questioning things, you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
and I personally can tend to pay too much attention. So we had some runway. We had investment from our other company that we have kind of pivoted into this. So that was nice. And then some of the tougher parts is just like, it really comes in peaks and valleys, building SaaS or software as a service, because there are the exciting parts where you're like, oh, I get to like create an entire new thing out of the air based on what I think someone might like. And then there are the difficult parts where you're like, oh, does anyone actually like this? So there, we spend a lot of time being like, is this what we want to be doing? Like, what direction do we want to be going? And there, I credit my co-founder with this a lot. If you are running a company, if you are building something that is new, having direction and intentionality is so key. I cannot stress it enough, because I will just jump into stuff and start like checking off task lists. And I will tend to forget that, you know, we're trying to actually do something good as opposed to trying to just complete the job. So a lot of the difficulty, I think, in these early stage companies is figuring out what is the right thing to do, starting down that path, and then keeping on that path, because it can be really hard to, when you're like halfway down the road and you haven't seen any results, but you're nowhere near finished. Like, that is a really hard place to be, especially if your livelihood depends on it. So I think looking into the future, seeing what that end goal is, and then working backward from there is the antidote to that. I think that there are going to be hard times no matter what you do, and a lot of it is trusting like past you's plans and future you to figure it out if the plans don't go well. It's a lot of trust. So there have absolutely been times in this one, in my previous one too, where, you know, and in my last business, we were on track for 1 million ARR that year, and I was still like, this isn't enough, we're not moving fast enough. And it was a really hard business as well. It was a tough job. And you got to ride them out, because there's going to be peaks and there's going to be valleys.
What would you say are the benchmarks to success? You know, you talk about 1 million in a year and wanting to move faster than that. When do you know when you've got something special?
How do you stop?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I'm not the right person.
I mean, I love the honesty, because it's a hard question, and I think everyone would answer it differently. Can you just go through, I guess, like your pricing model? Because it's different than, you know, we have a lot of D2C brands on this podcast. We don't do a lot of like B2B brands. And so when you're talking about a SaaS product where you're selling software, is it a monthly subscription? Like, what does that pricing model look like for companies that are interested?
Yeah, that is a great question. And we are working on our pricing model now. So we have had monthly subscriptions and annual subscriptions. We just recently removed our monthly subscriptions and increased our prices a little bit for the annuals. It's a test right now, so we're seeing how that goes. It's, you know, hairy.
Yeah.
And harrowing a bit. But people are buying it, so that's cool. But it makes me nervous, because I tend to undervalue things that I've done. So when I'm like,
well, it's hard, right? Because it's like, do you undervalue it so that you get more, like your thinking is probably like, oh, well, we'll get more people that are interested, right?
But our total revenue will be lower.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's cool to see people are like, I'm like, will people pay us $300 for this? And apparently they will, which is very
amazing. Yeah.
So pricing model, we're really working it out right now. We are in fact in process right now of launching something that I think a lot of our users want, which is a one-off pass. So not a subscription, which I know is, you know, total anathema to every SaaS product and how dare we, etc. But our users have asked for it in different ways. And it's clear that it's something that they want, because this is a tool that you use sometimes. Maybe you're just running one event and you don't want, it's not like, you know, QuickBooks where you need it every day or every time. We don't have lock-in that same way. For large events, for people who are like, hey, I'm just running this one all-hands meeting. So a lot of the work that we're doing now is figuring out how we can come and make kind of ongoing value for people in perpetuity.
That's an interesting point,
like,
too, because
you should use this for every meeting that you do.
Right.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, and it's also what I like what you're saying is you're talking about listening to your customers. So when your customers are expressing that they would like something else, instead of saying, well, we don't really do that, you're malleable. You're making sure that your product can fit that. And I think that's also an important thing too.
And it's a tough line to walk because, you know, in some inherent way in capitalism, our incentives are misaligned here. Like I'm looking to help our customers, but one of the things our customers want is not to give us any money.
Yeah.
Well, not us, but like in general, like as a consumer, your interest is to save your own money. And so my interest is to make a living and to make the product be valuable and have monetary value. So I do feel that kind of misalignment between goals and trying to meet in the middle there somewhere is the goal of the one-off non-subscription path.
Yeah, and it's also hard too, I'm sure, because you have these major corporations and then you also have teachers, right? So
some people are like, $800? Here, it's a Tuesday. And
right.
Some people are $12 a month.
Like, exactly. $12. But it's also, it gets to a point where it's like, come on, you have to expect that you're not I think a lot of people with that capitalism point that you made, there's a lot of people that think that all companies are out to get them or all companies are slimy and just want money. But there are so many grassroots entrepreneurs who are building, this is why the podcast is called The Next Big Thing, right? And they deserve to be paid for that because they've spent months building something that's going to help you that you could never build on your own. So it's hard to reconcile with someone that wants something so cheaply because it's not, and I don't think you would price it at a place too where it's unfair for people either. So it's a tough balance.
And I do want to be a value for people, even if they are not super huge corporate. I want teachers to be able to use us. I want nonprofits to be able to use us. We are going to put in place a plan for teachers that is lower cost, because I think there is value in this. I think that giving it to more people and helping like students be more engaged is a goal I can get behind. So
absolutely. What do you think about where remote work is headed or work in general? It is.
I think that
you have 1 minute. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
All right, speed talk.
Yeah.
I think more flexible work is here to stay. I think people are probably going to be going back to the office more as, you know, coronavirus obviously gets a little less intense. I think there will be more expectation for people to be in office, but I think that there will be less expectation than there was prior. I think hybrid work is going to be a big thing. I think like in office a couple of days a week is going to be a big thing, or like come in for the meeting. It's hard to know where it's going right now, but I think some sort of mixture is where it's going to end up, because it's honestly best for the worker to have that flexibility. Good for employers to not have to pay for real estate costs. Not great for commercial real estate, but there still will be a need for people to convene, and there is value in that. And I think it's going to net out where the convening is going to become something that is its own value. So like, let's get together to have a convention, or let's get together to have a meeting. But if you are doing work that doesn't require the input of other people, you don't necessarily need to be in a location to do that.
Love it. And what advice would you have for people who want to be better at working remote? Are there just like quick tips that you can provide to people that might be helpful?
Like employees who want to be better at
Or like, I think about myself having Zoom meetings, right? Or for anyone that's having a remote meeting, are there things that you've noticed or patterns that you noticed?
Yes, I have some great tips for Zoom calls if you want.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite things to do when I'm on a Zoom call is turn off my self view. You actually watching yourself back talk back to yourself is not a supernatural way to interact with people. It's very distracting. We don't in the real world stare at a mirror when we're talking to someone, and I think that it is an addition to our cognitive load to have to do that. So if you're on a Zoom call, take your mouse, hover over your image. A little three-dot menu is going to pop up. Click on it and just click hide self view. And the first time I did that, I was really nervous because I was like, whoa, I'm not gonna be able to see myself. Like, what if I have something in my teeth? Or what if I am sitting weird or my hair is weird? And then I realized I do that every day with people, like normally. total regularness to not see yourself. And so I was like, all right, so I bit the bullet and I did it. And the amount of relief that I felt was actually noticeable. It was relaxing. So I highly recommend that. I will also recommend, if you're like having a home office set up, to get yourself one of these, a mouse that doesn't have a cord and a keyboard that doesn't have a cord, because this is going to give you some freedom and space from your machine. So you're not locked in your box. You have space to step back, but still be involved in what's going on. Move around, you know. Let's see, other generalized tips for remote meetings and for working from home. Don't forget to take breaks. I will look up and realize I haven't moved from my desk in hours and hours.
It's scary when that happens. It feels like time flies because you just have no other anything telling you otherwise, right?
Yeah.
Like when you're in an office, I feel like you're hyper aware of those things because you have people walking by you and then you have meetings that you're going to.
Go grab coffee and talk to Joanne or something, but no.
Right. Yeah.
my dog is not the best water cooler conversationalist.
Yeah.
He's the only one here, so.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
Right. So give yourself those breaks because we are just like, you know, human meat puppets, really. Our body is carrying around our brain, and our brain should do some help for our body too sometimes. So moving around, making sure that you're just taking those physical breaks. One of the things I really like about working from home is that I'm now able to take like a 10-minute power nap after lunch, which has changed my life.
Yeah.
Like I can just like come back to work as opposed to like staring at the screen like a zombie for an hour after eating. I'm just like, oh, let me just actually do what my body is asking me to do and lie down for 1 minute.
Yes.
And then I'm much more productive afterward.
I love that. Those are really, really good tips. And the one about looking at yourself, that is such a good one. And I didn't even know that that was possible. I thought you could just turn off your camera and then no one can see you. Or
right.
That's brilliant.
But you can still see other people and not stare at yourself.
So good.
I find staring at myself so distracting.
Yeah, totally. What advice do you think entrepreneurs need to hear right now?
What advice do entrepreneurs need to hear right now? I guess it would depend on the entrepreneur.
That's a good way of answering that. I agree with you. Let's say a generalized group of entrepreneurs.
A generalized group of entrepreneurs. Take a minute, spend some time thinking about where you want to be, and work backward from there. A lot of people can tend to just be pushing the motions forward without realizing that when you get to where the motions have taken you, that's not where you wanted to go. This is mostly for me. So take a minute, sit down. You have a minute. In fact, you don't have time to not have a plan. Understand where you want to go and figure out the steps to getting there. Turn those steps into tasks and then trust your past self.
And where is your company headed? It's really, you're so real time, but you're not, because you're going to be around, because this is here. The new culture is here to stay, which is really amazing and something that none of us really anticipated. So that part's great. So what's on the horizon for you guys?
I think that, so we're moving into real world and hybrid events as well. We just ran a talk at Founder Summit in Mexico City, which was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Actually, a funny story about that. I showed up to a talk. This was a great conference for entrepreneurs, founders, and some really great people there. And I showed up to a talk, and it turned out that the speaker had not arrived. So one of our friends, who was a big deal sales guy, was like, I'm going to run this talk. It was about sales, or supposed to be about sales. And I was like, okay, do you want an interactive presentation deck with it? And he said, yes. So we sat down, and in 20 minutes, we built a little deck for him, and then he ran it with the whole group. So we had a great time.
Wow, that's so cool.
It was very, very cool, and everyone was having a great time. So we did like a live interactive word cloud, and we polled everybody about like where they were in their sales process, and it was a lot of fun.
That's amazing.
It was one of our first large group in-person events that I've done, and I was like, oh, this tool really works anywhere you can share your screen. So if it's like on a Zoom call, that's great, but you can also do it with a group of 150 people on a projector. Like, I think
that's so powerful too, to think it creates so much more community, you know, and that connection point, really.
Yeah, and that's the goal, is to help large groups give everybody a voice and feel more connected and invested in what the actual content is.
Yeah, that's amazing. Oh, cool. That's really cool. That's an awesome like application of it. And where can people find you if they want to use this product or they want to test it out?
Yeah, it's called Slides with Friends, and you can find us at slideswith.com or slideswithfriends.com. We are, you know, we have a lot of pre-made games, so you can basically just come in, grab a pre-made deck, and play it with your team. You can make your own from scratch as well, or what I think most of our users like to do is take some of our popular pre-made decks and just like tweak them a little bit, make them their own, and like really put their own personality into it, and then play it with their team. We've had a lot of people using it that way.
That's so cool. That's awesome. I love this. I can't wait for people to hear this episode, because we don't have a lot of B2B folks on the podcast, and there's so many use cases for this. Like, yeah. Even as you're talking, I'm thinking of like people that could use it, clients that could use it, different scenarios where it would be really engaging. Like, it's really cool. That's awesome. I'm excited. You guys are really helping to build the hybrid community, really, for people at work
goal.
And beyond. Yeah, it's amazing. Cool. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. It was really great to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Cecilia, for coming on today's episode and for coming on the podcast. You are a true inspiration for anyone that wants to just make moves and do something differently, especially during this pandemic, which is still going on. And I want everyone to go check out Slides with Friends. It's slideswith.com. We'll include the information in the show notes, but please make sure to go check it out. It is so cool. It really, truly is a completely novel concept. And I have no doubt that this is going to be the future of how we have events, how we have meetings. Like, this is not the last time that you're going to hear about Slides with. So you might as well get to know them now. So thanks again, Cecilia, for coming in the podcast. And if you guys love today's episode, make sure to let me know either in an email or in a review. Like I always say, I love hearing from you guys, and I'm so grateful for any support or criticism, constructive criticism, feedback that you can give me. It helps make this podcast so much better. And I am forever indebted to you guys as listeners. I'm just so happy to have you here. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast, and I will catch you guys next week. Have a good one.